This is the Total Football Podcast. I am Declan Hart.
And I'm Andrew Conway.
Let's get on with the show.
This fella Ronaldo is a cod.
Arsene Wenger's been in Japan for a year. He doesn't know anything about English football.
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
It's the history of the Tottenham.
But this action is really incredible. Incredible.
If you don't know the answer to that question, then I think you are an ostrich.
We managed to make it through to the other side of 2022. A lot has happened on the pitch since we last spoke, but before that, how was your New Year's, Andrew?
It wasn't too bad, you know, it's quiet this year again for another year. Has been very quiet in the holiday season. How was yours, Declan?
Yeah, not too bad. Just kind of chilled around. Didn't do a whole lot. Very
good for you. Good for you.
very, I suppose, the kind of normal that we're getting used to these days. Got my booster shot.
Oh, good. Good for you, Declan. Good for you.
Yeah. Been reeling from that ever since, to be honest. But, you know, it's still worth it.
It's so hard, yeah. Yeah. It's a hard life to live, but someone has to do it.
Yeah, I guess. But I suppose we should talk about some of the football that went on, because plenty happened since we last spoke, because obviously we did our predictions podcast pre-Christmas, and I think every team has played at least one since then, I think, except Leeds.
Yes, Leeds won. Leeds won against Burnley.
They're right, that's right. We'll just say everyone's played since at least once since then. But we'll start with the title race, where that's pretty much over at New Year's, isn't it?
I don't prescribe to the notion that, and I've said this all season, that this is going to be a high scoring points tally. I don't think this Manchester City side are anything to write home about. I think that's been shown up in a few games this season. I think they're very ideological and stuck to their guns, which is noble in some regards, but in a lot of other regards means that they can be got at, and I think they were got at the weekend, and they will be got at more times before the end of the season. That being said, I think they're probably going to win it in the long run anyway. They are maybe on their day, not the best team in the Premier League. I think probably Liverpool, or if Chelsea's players all show up, probably have them beaten mano a mano. But I think overall the squad of Man City is going to win out this league this year. And maybe they're getting into gear quicker than the opposition are, or the opposition are starting to fall away right at the crucial time when City probably will start picking up more of the results, because less so Chelsea, but obviously Liverpool are going to lose out massively because the AFCON is about to start. And now is the time for City to really pick up a lead. And even when the other teams have their full complement of players available to them, they're unable to put up a fight to them. And City are kind of clear ahead now, and they're probably going to win the league, though I still think they'll be in around the 85 mark, 85 to 90 point mark for a league winning campaign.
Yeah, like the thing about City, like there's a lot that goes on there, obviously, but... Like I don't find them entertaining to watch in any way. Like I find them quite boring, and I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that they're just kind of like they are just kind of perfect in a way. Like even in a game where like they didn't play particularly well against Arsenal in the weekend, and what was actually probably one of their more entertaining games this season. Like it was entertaining because Arsenal really gave it to them. Mm. Whereas I think a lot of teams just kind of sit back and let City win a lot of the time. Which leads to a lot of uninteresting games. Like I just kept waiting at 0-0 on Saturday. I just kept waiting for City to score that first goal, and then I'd switch over to, you know, something else, just play a video game, watch TV or something. Mm-hmm. Because that's just the way things have normally gone for City this season. Obviously Arsenal, you know, they are one of the big six sides still. We do think that they are maybe picking up in form a bit lately as well, so like it still took a big club to kind of give them a game. But you know, they had a couple of bad games at the start of the season as well, but like for the last month or two now, they've just been kind of perfect in a really uninteresting way. And it really comes to highlight the kind of fact that they really just do have limitless resources. Like while every other team is suffering for COVID and injuries and fixture congestion, you know, Pep Guardiola is pretty easy just rotating people in and out and having the same quality from, you know, person number 18 on the starting list to person number 5 and number 2, and it's all the same quality. And, you know, Pep's obviously done really well to maximize all these resources, but, you know, it doesn't seem largely that impressive either. And I suppose we'll see how they do in the Champions League and all that. But the fact that they're 10 points ahead, it's quite sad, because we could have had a really exciting league title this season, because, you know, we'll go on to talk about Chelsea and Liverpool, but those two are good but flawed sides, and that's what we like in champions, for someone to be really good but still have that not quite fatal flaw, but those couple of flaws that make them beatable on their day, that, and, you know, in the big games, you know, they're quite evenly matched with another big team. So you know, with City, we just don't really get that. Like, they've won, what, 10 league games now in a row. They could win another 10, and I wouldn't even notice. You know, like,
I think it's not 11 now, because they beat Arsenal. I think they've 33 points out of 33 in the
That took it up to 11. Okay, so yeah. You know, you look at the record for most ever longest ever winning streak in the Premier League. Like, before we had Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, that was what, 14 for Arsenal back in 2002, 2003, around that time. Since then, both those teams have beaten that record 3 or 4 times. So, you know, it just goes to show, you know, the ease with which these teams are able to win games now, and do it on the trot, and it's kind of taken the sting out of the title races, because, like, it's been a while now as well that we've had a really compelling title race. Even when Liverpool and Man City went down to the final day a few years ago, it still felt rather inevitable for the last 10 games that both teams would just win every game. So, you know, Liverpool did really well to match City that year, given their kind of, while they still have a lot of resources, they don't quite have the same that City have. And now I think we're kind of seeing, a couple of years on, you know, that City can just keep going at this pace, because they don't really have anything to stop them.
Yeah, like, the only thing that can stop them is themselves. And I think, you know, as I said, they are an ideological team. They do stick to the way they want to play. And if you get up them or change, you know, put pressure on them or come up with a different way to play them and make it more difficult for them, you can beat them. Tottenham did it earlier in the season. Different teams have done it this season. Arsenal really probably could have done it at the weekend. And so they are beatable. And the other thing I'm just thinking about is Pep Guardiola has kind of made this his trademark of winning leagues early, or winning leagues quite effortlessly, or at least seemingly effortlessly, whatever the word is when you don't use effort. And it generally comes back to haunt him, because his teams become very complacent, and when the big games come, they're unable to do it. It's like the inverse of a cup team. You know, a cup team can really pull it out on one occasion. Pep Guardiola is almost the opposite, that the one occasion kind of gets too much for them. And
and that's why they've not won the Champions League, really.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they can win other cups, in fairness, and they do consistently win other cups, and we are talking about a side that was very closely beaten in the Champions League final last season. So it's not like they're million miles away from winning it. And if they had, you know, a couple of things had gone differently in that match last year, we wouldn't even have this argument to lay our britches on. But yeah, I think it does haunt them, and I think, in an ideal world, I think Pep Guardiola would prefer to have, and Man City for that matter, the players at the club, would probably prefer to be a bit closer. I think they're probably surprised as we are that everyone else has fallen away so drastically and they've just managed to keep on ticking over. Because I don't want to say they've played amazingly well in the last 11 games, but they haven't played atrociously either. It's just other teams haven't been able to either get up to their standard or outdo them, or even just keep status quo with them. And I think that's a bit disappointing on the rest of the league, their performers in the rest of the league and at the top of the table, because I thought at the beginning of the season we would have a bit more of a race in store for it. And certainly even up to like October, November, the performances of Chelsea and Liverpool respectively really did like make you think that something was going to happen. But since then, despite, you know, you almost have to be perfect, as you said, like City have won 11 games in a row, you drop a couple of points, which isn't the worst thing in the world to do for Liverpool or Chelsea, and you're just cut off miles away.
Yeah, like, because the thing that really separates them at the moment is the fact that Chelsea and Liverpool keep drawing games. They've all three of them have only lost twice in the league this season. But Man City, they find those wins, and I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, squad depth does make that easier, because, you know, when you're in a hard-fought game that's won all and your players aren't as tired because they've been rotated better, you have that better chance of scoring a winner. And that even goes for the start of games, where you're able to rotate players more and it makes you able to start the game quicker than other teams. So, and you know, we see them as well, like they had the game against Brentford last week where they took an early 1-0 lead and then just slowed the game down entirely. And again, that was them able to keep their legs much fresher than Chelsea and Liverpool, who, you know, both kind of been ravaged between COVID and just regular injuries. And we kind of saw that on Sunday. Is that right? Sunday? That doesn't sound right.
I don't even know what days of the week are anymore.
Yeah, I think it was, we'll say it was Sunday, when the two of them faced at Stamford Bridge, and it was a great electric game that I think a lot of us really enjoyed, at the very least for the first hour. And you know, a lot of that came down to the fact that, well, neither team really had midfielders to play in those games. Both teams were missing players of fullback. One team was even missing their goalkeeper. So, you know, we're seeing the difference here in a mega squad and a really good squad.
Yeah, I don't think, like, we haven't even got into kind of the transfer talk or the business that's already started happening or the rumors that are happening, but the ability of certain teams to just cast away world-class players and not sweat it, you know, is kind of bizarre. And it might be something that is unusual now, but it might be something we look at it to be a common case in years to come, that teams are able to just endure through all of this.
I suppose we should talk about that Chelsea-Liverpool game, which was, I thought, quite exciting. You know, the first half was electric. Yeah. Second half did slow down a little, but what do you make of the whole thing?
I definitely did think that Chelsea completely lost the run of themselves in that first half. I think they could have been a lot more than 2-0 down had Liverpool actually taken their chances. There's a few attempts in there that were a bit wayward, and a few opportunities where they carved them out through the middle. Conversely, I don't know what happened to Liverpool, really. They kind of just went to sleep on a couple of occasions through the middle of the field, and that allowed players to, well, on the first goal, I think it was a fantastic finish. I don't think Kevin Keller and goals could have done anything about it. But the second goal was just, they went to sleep in the middle of the field and they play a simple ball through, and then it's on the play for the centre forward, who isn't going to miss at that range. Someone of that quality isn't going to miss at that range. And then after that, I just think Liverpool kind of were, the wind was taken out of their sails almost, and they just couldn't get themselves back out to the place they were earlier in the match. And Chelsea, in fairness to them, ground out more chances and could have had the game had their finishing been a bit more on point. So I think it is encouraging from Thomas Tuchel's point of view, but I think there is still worries there if you're a Chelsea fan, and from the Liverpool point of view, I'd definitely be worried going into the next couple of weeks, because they're going to be missing some of their most important players in the team, and with no obvious replacements there that can actually do or change anything up, even when those players are working very well as they did yesterday. There's nothing else in that team from an attacking point of view that can throw things asunder. Like, they brought off Diogo Jota and brought on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I thought that was a weird decision, but they did that, and it didn't change anything in the match, really. And I think that's what Liverpool fans might have in store for the next month, as Liverpool try and, you know, they throw stuff at the wall and hope that something sticks and they can start getting goals into the game without the inclusion of Sadio Mane or Mo Salah. It'll be very interesting, I think. Chelsea on their side, I think I am worried about them. And as I said jokingly in the last thing, I think we're in the beginning of the end of the Tuchel reign. It could take a year yet and they could win trophies before he's done. But yeah, it seems like some players are definitely with him and some players aren't, and I think the fullback issue they're suffering at the moment was very much present. Their central midfield seems absent a lot of times, and if it wasn't for really the wealth of resources at their disposal, I think Liverpool could have been out of sight in that game.
Yeah, like it was really strange circumstances in which Liverpool just kind of blew Chelsea away at the start, but then Mendy made a couple of decent saves. Keller, too, made some good saves, 2-0 as well, and at 2-2. So, you know, both, I think both teams could have taken this one for a finish. But I think Liverpool really should be disappointed that they couldn't hold on at all. Like, once Chelsea got one, it seemed inevitable that they'd get two, and then it like instantly happened, which would have been really disappointing for a lot of them. And Jurgen Klopp wasn't at the game, of course.
Nope.
But like, the thing with Liverpool is they will only be missing, I think, two league games with Salah and Mane, which isn't too bad. Obviously, I think it probably depends on how Egypt and Senegal do in AFCON, but you know, I think two games is what we're looking at is them missing right now, because of the amount of FA Cup and League Cup games that are going on at the moment, which isn't the worst case scenario, really. I think one of them is Brentford, I forget the other one, but it's not a huge, it's not like a Man City that they're missing or something. It's another kind of mid-table side that they'll be playing.
Yeah, because this was their biggest match, I think, left in January, other than the they have two legs against Arsenal, which the way Liverpool approached the match against Leicester City, you can imagine, you can believe that they're not going to put out the best side in that. So yeah, they're only missing a couple of big matches or Premier League matches, but I'd still be concerned.
Yeah, like, especially when you know that the drop-off in quality is big enough that maybe they will actually drop a couple of points in those
games. Going to score for them? Who's going to score? Like, Divock Origi?
Yeah, like, Diogo Jota is a good kind of gunner in terms of finding a goal, but, you know, maybe he needs the distraction of a Mo Salah in and around the box for him to open up some space. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out, I guess.
Well, yeah, like, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, while I'm looking at the creativity in the team, and for the last couple of years, Liverpool's, and we all know this, their creativity's come down the flanks. It's been Alexander-Arnold, it's been Robertson on the other side. Now, I think the Greek guy, who I won't even try to pronounce his name because I'll get it wrong, I think he was an able deputy entirely, and I think he was decent defensively as well in the game, but Trent Alexander-Arnold was doubled up at times in that match, and their, you know, teams are targeting them to kind of put him out of the game. And if you put him out of the game, and there's no Mo Salah, there's no Sadio Mane, where is the creativity going to come from? I made, you know, the comment about Oxlade-Chamberlain. I don't think he's going to be creating chances for Diogo Jota. And Jota isn't a guy that's going to be able to do it all on his own. He was never that player. He isn't that at Portugal. He wasn't that at Wolves. Where's the creativity coming from in the rest of that team while they're out?
A lot of it, I suppose, will depend on if Thiago can come back, I guess, because you'd be hoping that he can open up some you know, deep defenses or whatever coming in. So he's better than nothing. Virgil van Dijk has a good pass on him as well, but he is obviously playing from such a deep position.
Yeah.
But we already know that they like to create from deep positions, because they're the kind of positions that Trent and Robertson can create from. So, you know, I'm sure they can figure something out. It is only two games. It's probably enough that they might drop points in those two games, but they're not difficult enough that, you know, it's a certainty that they'll drop points either. So I don't think it's a huge disaster, especially when we say that the league title is probably done. You know, as long as they don't get injured, they should be back for the Champions League game. So that I suppose will probably be Klopp's biggest priority now for the rest of the season. And it's a game like last night as well that makes you think Liverpool can win the Champions League, even though I know they didn't win. Just because when things do get very frenetic and chaotic, as can happen in the Champions League, you know, they do tend to thrive in it. Like, they took those two goals in pretty assured fashion. They created good chances for themselves aside from that. And you know, if they can have players coming back from injury, I think they'll be a lot less open defensively. And, you know, that, you know, I don't even think that is a case of Alisson. Like, you could probably keep Keller in goals because he's such a good backup goalkeeper. I'm not just saying that because we love our Irish goalkeepers.
No, but he can pass the ball. He kind of has that about him. Yeah,
he's a good goalkeeper for what Liverpool needs. So you can even have him in goals and still have your midfielders come back, and Liverpool still look pretty solid defensively, or that much more solid defensively, that they won't be picked apart. By the way, in the way that Chelsea picked them apart at 2-0 in this game, so. You know, I do think there's still plenty of optimism for Liverpool's season. Like, if they didn't win the league but they won the Champions League, I'm sure they'd be more than happy with that. You know, they've won one each of those titles, so I'm sure they're not picky about which one they'd win again if they were offered it. So, yeah, like, there's still a lot to be looking forward to for Liverpool. And I don't think that, you know, the absence of Mane and Salah will be as big a deal for them long term. As I suppose we've made it out to be in the past. However, the loss of Benjamin Mendy, I do worry a bit for Chelsea, just because I do think that if results kind of spiral for them with Mendy out, which I think could happen, you know, they could suddenly get dragged into a top four race, which I don't think they would want at all. Like, we're seeing the likes of Arsenal pick up results. We're seeing West Ham even picking up results again now. Tottenham and Man United are both a lot better than they were a month ago, which obviously the bar was low, but they are improving. So I do think that they need to avoid getting dragged into a top four race there, because, you know, once you're in that battle, it's very easy to play down to their level and miss out. So, you know, I'd be a bit more worried for Chelsea there than I would be Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's all up in the air. We will see a nice little. I think it'll be very interesting next month, for both teams.
Yeah, and then obviously Chelsea have the whole Romelu Lukaku situation going on. a Sky Italia interview from 3 weeks ago surfaced or came out before the build up to this Chelsea Liverpool game, in which he said he wasn't happy with the situation, that he wanted more playing time. Obviously, in the 3 weeks since that interview had come out, he had received more playing time as he'd come back from injury. But obviously it came out at such a wrong time that Thomas Tuchel was not happy, and such he was not even in the matchday squad for this amazing Liverpool game that I'm sure he would have loved to have been a part of. So he kind of dug his own grave there. There's set to be talks this evening, and I'm sure the news will come out by the time you're listening to this. You know, there's talk of clubs making offers for Lukaku this January, including Juventus and Tottenham. So yeah, like, he's only just joined the club again. You know, he's missed 7 years at the club, having left in 2014 for Everton, and
he is a Chelsea fan. Like, he is a, you know, that, yeah, that was meant to be a motivation behind all this. And maybe, like, I wonder how much of a signing this was by Thomas Tuchel and how much of a signing it was for the Roman Abramovich or the club itself.
Exactly.
That they want to bring him home. Because, you know, there have been reluctancies in the past to re-sign players that have left Declan Rice, that, you know, that caused a bit of a rift, apparently, in the relationship between the Chelsea hierarchy and Frank Lampard, because he wanted to sign him, and they didn't want to pay big money to bring someone that they had cut from their youth setup. So no was the answer that was given to that. But they were so firm with Lukaku that this was their big target for the summer. They brought him in. They, you know, the fanfare that was there, the talk of him, he was coming home and all this, and that Chelsea had finally got their man, and he's finally matured to be the top class, world class striker that we all assumed he had always somewhat been at the previous clubs he's been at. And then it's gone to nothing. And, like, I don't know. Did you feel ever, like, I don't feel that Lukaku, like, maybe at the time I was blinded by it, but, like, looking back now, does Lukaku fit a Thomas Tuchel style of football? Like, if you look at the strikers, centre forwards, he loves having a direct, quick, pacey centre forward. Like, you think back of Aubameyang at Dortmund, you think of the various options he had at for runners at PSG, and then, like, even last season he very seldom used a straightforward centre forward at Chelsea when they were going on to win the Champions League. Like, Kai Havertz played there in the final. He's not a centre forward in the classical mould, and like Lukaku is. So it does make you think, like, what's happening there? Is this a breakdown of relationships? Does Tuchel have that power that he wants to get rid of Lukaku now and perhaps make a loss on the player so that, you know, they put a line in the sand, and are Chelsea finally going to change the way they are and back their manager? I don't know.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that as well is, like, in the history, in the Roman Abramovich history of Chelsea Football Club, when have they ever backed the manager over the player in this kind of circumstance? And they've
never.
Always yeah, especially when the player costs over 100 million and he just arrived at the club within the last 4 months. You know, like, you're right in the sense that, you know, I do now definitely think that this was a signing made by the board and the club and not by Thomas Tuchel, because, like, when I first heard that Chelsea were interested in signing Lukaku, I thought it was a bit weird, because, you know, they'd already spent so much money the year before on all these attacking players, and they just won the Champions League, kind of making them all work under Thomas Tuchel. But, you know, I gave them the benefit of the doubt, and I thought, okay, Tuchel must have some kind of plan to fit him in. They must be changing the style of play slightly to make it work. And at the start of the season, it seemed like that might be the case, that he's linking up with Timo Werner quite well, and it would look like one of Kai Havertz or Mason Mount or Hakim Ziyech or two of those might even miss out to fit Lukaku. But then he got injured, and Chelsea kind of played quite well without him, maybe even better without him. Yeah. And now he's coming back from injury, and it just seems like there's no real fit for him in the team other than coming off the bench when a game is 1-1, which is what happened against Aston Villa. And it really does feel like, why did this transfer happen other than Lukaku likes Chelsea, and Chelsea had the money, and Inter needed the money. Like, I'm sure Lukaku, as he's alluded to, would have been very happy to stay in Milan and at Inter, where he just won a league title with Antonio Conte, and obviously he's got a great relationship with Conte, who's obviously now at Tottenham, hence the links there, I think. As weird as it would sound that he would go to Tottenham, I think, considering Conte is there, maybe he would. And
I think that's paper talk. I think that's them putting, you know, two together, getting five, because, oh, this is handy.
But the whole thing really does feel like a plan that wasn't planned out at all. And it does leave me wondering what the hell is going to happen next, because like the whole thing is kind of just blown up out of nowhere. Like a week ago, Lukaku, I would have just said, you know, guy coming back to fitness, will get back into the Chelsea team because he costs so much money and he's a good player. And now it's like, will someone make an offer for him in January? Will it be Barcelona with their newfound wealth? Who is gonna solve this issue? Because like I've seen a lot of people compare it as well to when Wayne Rooney had his big kind of falling out about 10 years ago now at Manchester United with Ferguson, and everything kind of got patched up there. And you know, to an extent, you'd say, okay, well, Ferguson is obviously one of the greats. He's a fantastic man manager. He's probably, you know, the one guy you'd say could have resolved that problem at the time. And now I'm looking at Thomas Tuchel, a guy who fell out with a load of players at PSG, a lot of even bigger names at PSG. And I'm thinking, you know, is he going to resolve this issue? I don't really think so. So, you know, I think this could really accelerate the whole beginning of the end for Tuchel, who, you know, has suffered some unfortunate results lately, you know, due to injury. Like, I don't think they've played that poorly this season. You know, they've not quite reached the defensive heights that they did last season. They haven't quite been as good as Man City or probably even Liverpool, but they've still been the third best team. But they've had a lot of injuries, and it's really poked a lot of holes in how paper thin this squad actually is in certain areas. Fullbacks.
The fullback. Aside from the fullback loss, like I don't think that carries water. But go on.
But when they lose someone like Kante, they just don't have the quality in midfield to replace him. Like,
yeah, but no one in the world does.
True, but you know, they can't. Like, that means they can't really afford to build a squad around or a team around Kante, and they kind of have in a way. Like Kovacic and Jorginho are obviously both very good midfielders. I don't think they really work well together without a third man in there. And they don't really have a third man in there to do that. Is Ross Barkley still talking about?
He still is, yeah. Surprisingly, he did play against Villa, I believe.
Right, former club Aston Villa, of course. Yeah. I do think they've just had the wrong injuries, which can happen. It happened to Liverpool last season, and it is unlucky. Mm. But yeah, I think it's kind of all spiraling and coming together in a way that's really working against Tuchel right now.
Yeah, like I get what you're saying with it. Like you kind of, yeah, like to tackle the injury thing just sticks into me, because like there's other clubs that have been suffering terribly with injuries. We've talked about Leeds, we haven't talked about Southampton or other clubs that have been really struggling with it, and Chelsea with the wealth that they have and the 30 plus players on loan and the fact that they were crying wolf, or not, maybe that's not the right metaphor to use, but they were crying something over the last few weeks with the players they have. Like I don't really stand to that. I think Tuchel should get the best out of whatever's there, and to be honest, I think the limitations and the failure to get points in recent weeks has been more down to the way that they've played rather than any particular absence of a player. Like I don't know. Like I know I made the argument earlier that like the fact that the fullbacks weren't there and it was Alonso and Aspilicueta up against the Liverpool forwards, and they looked at sea at times. But I was thinking about it at one stage when it might have been Salah just skipped past Alonso on the left-hand side, and I was like, well, would Chilwell have done any better? I'm not sure if he would have. Maybe it's just an excuse in my head. Maybe I think he's just a bit, you know, he's slow as Alonso can tend to be. I don't know, but I think Chelsea are playing, and we're doing this last season as well, but they won the Champions League playing this way. They're playing within themselves. They're playing a very structured form of football, which is what they needed after Frank Lampard's kind of freedom and let them do what they want to do. But as we've talked about in the past, I think in the modern top level game, you have to have a structured attack. And I often feel that Chelsea don't have that they kind of leave it up to the players, as long as they stay within, you know, stay within themselves in terms of the defensive shape, that they can do what they want going forward and leave it up to the, you know, the Mason Mounts, the Pulisic, the whoever is fit at the time, Kai Havertz of this world, to kind of figure something out and do something about it. And oftentimes that results in you not getting very far with the, or scoring a lot of goals. And, you know, I think they were very fortunate. I know the second goal followed very closely, but the first goal came from absolutely nowhere. It was an amazing strike, and it really changed. It sunk Liverpool's confidence, I think, right before half time, and they obviously collapsed then right into half time. And I think without that, it would have been a very different situation, and we possibly could have been talking about the pressure being mounting on Thomas Tuchel today. And I think that'll come back again. It's not going to go away anytime soon, and I think the pressure will continue to mount, and it won't be to do with the lack of left back or right back available to him.
Yeah, like, I do think the current system does get the best out of certain players in the team. Like, it gets the best out of Rudiger and Silva, which I don't think a back four would work. I do think, you know, with the wing backs they have, like, I think the system makes a lot of sense for the players at their disposal, but when those players aren't suddenly there, like the wing backs, you know, they haven't adjusted properly, which is also on Tuchel. And as well as that, you know, Tuchel was complaining a lot about the injuries against Brighton when they dropped points late on, but Brighton were missing like their whole back four, or three of their back four, as well as another player in midfield. So it's not like they're the only team suffering from injuries either. I'm just saying it in the context of this Man City run. You know, I don't think Man City have been 10 points clearer than Chelsea when Chelsea are at their best, but Chelsea just haven't been because they don't have the players at the moment. But I do definitely think that the pressure could mount on Tuchel, especially given what's going on with Lukaku at the moment and the way that that's all unraveled. Yeah, definitely going to be something we're going to need to keep an eye on, because, you know, 6-7 weeks ago, I think Chelsea were sitting much prettier than they are now. And despite the fact that they are technically above Liverpool in the table, I do think Liverpool have a much brighter next 6 months ahead for them. If everything can keep clicking for them, and if they can avoid an injury to any of their big players, which they couldn't do last season, obviously.
Chelsea could get a new manager, and it could all start true. Again.
Win another Champions League.
Yeah, they could win another Champions League. Like we talk about, like, Liverpool played, despite the terrible season Liverpool had with all the injuries we talked about last season, they played the better football, but Chelsea came out with a Champions League, and I think history will remember that more. And that could happen all over again. It's the curse of modern football at the moment, unfortunately.
And then finally, did you hear the news, Andrew, that Barcelona are apparently back? I'm hearing word from Spain.
Yeah. You know, it's right before, like, I think the big holiday in Spain is January the 6th. So we're right before the big holiday there. And I think it's just something like a Christmas present from Juan Laporta to Barcelona fans to kind of give them a bit of hope going into this new year and going into the festive period. That they've, you know, they've done the hard things now. They've got rid of Messi, and they've got rid of the bad manager that nobody wanted anymore, and they've brought in the man that they, you know, the salvation, the Messiah that's going to bring them forward and bring them back to the promised land. I don't see it happening anytime soon, if I'm being honest. I think Barcelona are signing players. They keep signing players for the same position when it's not the position they need. So yet another kind of second forward converted, you know, runner in Ferran Torres has gone and joined the Blugler, or however you meant to say it, that word. Get in line with Braithwaite and Luke de Jong and Memphis Depay and whoever else who's hanging around there. They're all playing the same position. Only one of them can play. And I don't understand Barcelona's logic with this other than make a political statement, and maybe that was what Laporta wanted to do the whole time.
Well, like, it was only 18 months ago that Ferran Torres signed for City for about half the price that they've just sold him to Barcelona. They sold him for about €55 million. Laporta has been at the unveiling today as president of Barcelona. I think that's normally what happens. He's come out and said, everybody in the world should get ready as we are back as big players in the market. Barca are back, he exclaimed. So, you know, what they didn't say, or what he didn't say, is that they can't register Ferran Torres because of them not being able to afford his wages. So they need to sell a couple of players. Probably will be the likes of Martin Braithwaite and Luke de Jong that they look to sell. They've also been linked with selling Frankie de Jong and Marc-Andre Ter Stegen and Sergiño Dest. So luck finding a buyer for some of those players.
Yeah, like I personally think Frankie de Jong would be an amazing signing for
anyone.
Yeah, mostly anyone. I think a team that wants to... I think for him as well, it might help him taking that step down. I don't think that Barcelona was too big a club for him by any stretch of the imagination. I think he has the talent to survive at a top team, but I think him taking a step down might be very good for his career and him kind of working his way back up again and proving himself that he is the world-class player that we thought he was at Ajax. The other guys, like, I think they've reached the career's end at Barcelona and they're not going to get any better. Like, I don't know who's going to take Ter Stegen off your hands, who's going to take, like, Braithwaite or the other De Jong off your hands. I don't know. There's some younger players at Barcelona as well that are probably going to be sold. I think it would be interesting for any club to go in there and see what they can get out of Barcelona at the moment. But if they want to register Ferran Torres, and you can imagine he's on big salary, like, they've got rid of Aguero already, who probably took up a bit of a chunk of salary expenditure. But I'd say they will need to get rid of one of those, at least one of those big other spenders or big other earners rather at Barcelona before he can even, you know, put on the shirt.
I'm so happy, believe me. I'm so happy. Happy New Year.
Arsenal have taken command of the top four battle, and despite losing against Manchester City, they look quite good up against the best team in the country at the moment. But is Mikel Arteta starting to click at Arsenal? Has it all been part of the plan this whole time, or are they having a false dawn?
Well, as Arteta always says, trust the process. I'm not a huge fan of Mikel Arteta, mainly because of the way he plays football, and I don't really like it that much. That being said, this is what he's been building towards, and I think he's been fortunate or unfortunate, if you want to look at it, that he's finally kind of got the style of player on the field that he wants to have on the field. He's got runners up front, three runners playing up front who will close down and will work and press. He's got guys in midfield who'll do the same, with relatively good technical ability to match with it, and he's got defensively solid fullbacks and centre back and a goalkeeper in there now. It's not Hollywood, it's not flourishing, it's not kind of exciting edge of the seat side of stuff, but it does seem to be what Arteta wants. It's very functional. Despite everything else that's happened this season, and despite the fact that Arsenal started the campaign with three consecutive defeats and looked really bad against both Manchester United and Everton at times, in the kind of bigger challenges they've had this season, they've started to really shake things up and charge into that top four. And in a time when kind of everybody is dropping points, to say the least, and oftentimes looking bad doing it, they're starting to either pick up points or look good dropping points, which is, you know, something. I think they were very unfortunate to lose against Man City. A 93rd minute winner was a pretty gutting way for a lot of those players to lose after being, you know, whatever you think about refereeing decisions, but being down to 10 men for a considerable portion of time and running and pressing Man City as harshly as they did throughout the game. They'd feel pretty bad about themselves, I think, now. Who else can challenge them in that top four race? I think you're looking at Manchester United. Do they have what it takes? I think they probably could. And given that everybody around them has kind of lost momentum in recent times in this top four race, they could have it there. Yeah, Tottenham as well, obviously, are in there as well. I don't know if West Ham have it to sustain. But yeah, it's... as opposed to what I was saying a few weeks ago, when things were looking, shaping up to be a big, long number of clubs in this top four race, it's starting to shrink down to be the kind of usual contenders.
Yeah, like Arsenal have had a really weird season, and they've been the topic of debate, I know, for a lot of stats nerds this year, because they've had a lot of weird numbers going in their way because they've had so many outlier games in both directions. And for a lot of the first portion of the season, obviously they had those big early losses, which, you know, were bad no matter what way you looked at it. You know, even if you account for the players missing, those were just bad performances and bad results.
Yeah.
But then they were starting to pick up wins while still playing quite poorly. And their thing as well was, for a lot of games, they would take the lead, sit back and hold on, largely because Ramsdale went on a really great streak of saving a lot of really great shots, which was to his credit. And I do think he's a top goalkeeper based off of his performances this season. But then somewhere around the time Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang got dropped and Martinelli came in, everything has started to kind of click a lot better for Arsenal. They're playing a lot better. Their numbers have improved. You know, they're still not massively amazing, you know, in the context of a top four battle, but they're definitely better. They're definitely improving. And relative to the teams that they are actually up against, they're not bad. Martinelli has been quite good. He injects that bit of energy that Aubameyang just doesn't anymore. You know, it was seen as a bit of a scandal, I guess, whenever, you know, this always happens in Arsenal, that their big name club captain, 33-year-old on massive wages, gets dropped. We've been there and done that a few times now. But you know, it's normally a big scandal, but I think this time it has kind of come and gone because Martinelli was there and probably should have been there the whole time anyway. Because, you know, this is a guy that before Arteta came in looked quite exciting in his few appearances for Unai Emery, looked really good out on the left and definitely looked like someone who could come into the centre in the future. And now, you know, he's still on the left and he's doing quite well. Like, they've dropped Emil Smith Rowe as well as part of this whole thing, even though he's the club's top scorer this season, he can't get in. So I think that speaks to how well everything's kind of clicking at the moment. Lacazette is pairing a lot better with Martinelli than Aubameyang was. Saka has come into some form as well after kind of having that kind of dip that normally happens, you know, post Euros, post kind of breakout couple of seasons. You know, it's very normal for him to have the kind of drop off he had, and now he's kind of picking that up again. So I do think there's cause for optimism with Arsenal. They're obviously losing Thomas Partey now for the next month or so to AFCON. He's going to Ghana, and he just had probably his best game this week against Man City. Xhaka, I think, has improved. You know, he still wouldn't maybe trust him, and, you know, he was the one that gave away the stupid penalty against Man City.
Yeah, you don't trust him at all. He's Granit Xhaka, you know, for all...
But he is having more consistently good games than he is having consistently bad games, which is an improvement.
That's Granit Xhaka. Granit Xhaka is a solid, you know, he is a solid 7 out of 10, 9 out of 10 games. It's just that one game in 10 where he does something ludicrously stupid, like score an own goal, pass the ball into nobody, get sent off, give away a penalty, just be absolutely ludicrous.
There was that period there, though, where it felt like that, instead of being every 1 in 10 games, it's starting to become every 1 in 4, 1 in every 3 games, which, you know, I think, you know, whether or not that's up to Arteta or not, I think someone there has arrested that problem to an extent and brought it back down to 1 in 10, which is not bad. So he's become that little bit more solid and reliable, but he obviously still not perfect. Still wouldn't trust him. Kieran Tierney's come into his own again since injuries, and Tavares has been an able deputy. Gabriel and White have struck up a nice partnership. And Tomiyasu, I think, you know, he doesn't give you the same on the ball stuff that Bellerin did, but I think he's that bit more defensively solid that it's fine, because
he's 6'2" as well, so he's an out ball. He can head the ball. He's very good at jumping.
Yeah, like, it's a good balance there with him and Tierney in a way that I don't think him and Bellerin ever quite worked out. So, and obviously, as I said, Ramsdale has been excellent. So I do think that the young core of players there, it's starting to look a lot more cohesive, and like a long-term vision for the club is starting to become a bit more apparent now. So I do think there's a lot of positives around Arsenal. I don't think they'll quite do enough to get top four, but, you know, considering where they've been the last 2 years, really, under Arteta, it's a big sign of progress. And the curious thing right now is wondering how much of it is, you know, Arteta's plans are finally starting to fall into place, and how much of it is just good planning by Arsenal. And I think, you know, whichever one it is a good sign either way. But, you know, it is curious. Yeah, like, it is curious what's actually going on there.
Yeah, like, it is a very deep thing you can get into, like the way the squad makeup has changed even in the process of this season. Arsenal have, and we've said the last few years, been doing a major clear out, been doing, you know, in similar ways to Manchester United post Alex Ferguson, except this seems to have gone on longer at Arsenal. They've been reconstructing the side in different images, getting rid of dead weight, as they would see it, getting rid of contracts that have been in existence since the Wenger era. There's still some of those players hanging around. Sek Lasinac is still there. And then there's a lot of other players coming to the end of their contracts. The aforementioned Alexander Lacazette is leaving in the summer. Like, he can start talking to teams now, I think, because his contract is out in the summer. So he probably will sign a contract with somebody else, you'd imagine. And he's captaining the team at the moment. There's other players like that, like Eddie Nketiah. Even Granit Xhaka himself was basically sold in the summer, and it was only at the last minute when Roma didn't want to stump up the money that they'd agreed to, that Arsenal just signed him up to a new deal and kept him at the club. It is a very strange thing. I don't know who the credit should lie with for the slow rebuild at Arsenal. Like, I don't know if Edu is it, like, the jury's out with him. He's the technical director at Arsenal. Former Invincible, he did well in Brazil, but he's very much he isn't someone, you know, he isn't a Ralph Raniak, I put it that way. He's not someone behind the scenes generally kind of collating data and putting things together and figuring out the best way to go on a five-year plan. He is someone who's about doing deals. He is someone about getting the best for the team, or his client, who is Arsenal in this case. It was almost like an agent type of relationship, and he is doing it that way. The other guys, you know, they're well worn in football. The other people that are available at the club, that, you know, Steve Round, you have Albert, whatever his name is, that took charge of Arsenal at the weekend when Arteta was out with COVID. Former manager at Genk, former assistant to Louis van Gaal at Manchester United and at Wales. He knows the game, and there's a lot of people like that. So there's a lot of experience in the side behind the scenes that is kind of coming through in the team. I still think they're a bit away from hitting that Arteta plan, like actually doing it. I think their midfield is still extremely weak. You know, as you said, Partey had the best game probably he's had for Arsenal the season and a half he's been there, but at the same time, he's going to AFCON now, and, you know, one game in 40 or 50, however many he's played for Arsenal at this stage, isn't great. So they still need to resolve that, and the whole attacking options. I don't know what the future holds for a new player coming in there to replace Alexander Lacazette, but the rest of the work they've done to kind of clear out some of that dead weight, replace players that really, despite their qualities, just weren't working anymore. I still think there's a bit more of that to do, and I think they've done a decent job at it. Much my bemoaning of them not scoring any goals, they've managed to start scoring goals now as well, which is a good sign for them, but a bad sign for the other teams chasing in the top four positions. All of that being said, I'm looking at the Manchester United squad, I'm looking at the Spurs squad. How many of them would how many Arsenal players would you insert into that team? Those squads, there's probably not a huge amount. You know, Spurs, they could have improvements, definitely, but like Manchester United, the world-class nature, the ability of those players to kind of do something on their own, I don't know if many Arsenal players would make it into those teams.
Yeah, like, the thing I wonder as well about Arsenal is, like, they have such a nice, exciting young core of players there that I do wonder, like, if it wasn't Mikel Arteta in charge, you know, a lot of those players probably would have come through anyway. But would a different manager be able to do a bit more with these players, even?
Would a different manager have played them? You know, that's the other thing as well.
Yeah, I suppose. But given the fact that it doesn't appear that Mikel Arteta is that in charge of, like, he doesn't seem to have that big of a say in terms of who comes in terms of signings. Like, I wonder.
He is manager. They could give him that title rather than head coach. He was initially head coach, and then they appointed a manager.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that actually is, you know, objects him getting stuff, new responsibilities, how much of it is just saying, oh, he's got a new title, look at how fancy it sounds. So, like, I just wonder if a different manager could be getting more from this team, or if Arteta is actually maximizing what this team is capable of. We just don't know, because Mikel Arteta doesn't have another reference point for us on a CV for us to be like, oh, well, when he was at this club, he was able to do this with that. So, you know, it just leaves a lot of question marks over, you know, what this Arsenal team could be, I guess. And like, the worrying thing as well is that, like, they have suffered a lot of hidings. Like, when something goes wrong for Arsenal, like, everything seems to go wrong. Like, even in this game, like, they, you know, they were doing quite well. They were 1-0 up. Everything was going swimmingly. They were really taking it to the champions, and then suddenly they give away a stupid penalty. Gabriel gets a stupid red card, and then, you know, what looked like a great day turned out to be a pretty disappointing one. You know, I'm sure if they'd been told a 93rd minute winner was going to come at the end of the day, they would have said, oh, you know, we must have done quite well. Sounds a lot better than losing 5-0 like has happened in the past. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's just, it leaves you going, well, that is kind of same old Arsenal in the way that they just kind of capitulate. And we've seen them capitulate to Man City at the Etihad. We've seen them lose pretty embarrassingly at Anfield. They got done at home to Chelsea as well. And, like, obviously those are the three best teams, but at the same time, you know, they aren't doing that to every team in the league. They're not doing it to the other, well, they did to Man United, but that was an extenuating circumstance that saw a manager lose his job. Mikel Arteta is still in his position. You know, we're not seeing you know, the other teams. We're not seeing West Ham lose those games embarrassing. We're even seeing West Ham beat those teams. So, you know, they are the competition as well. And we'll see how Tottenham and Man United stack up now in the second half of the season with their new managers in these big games. But, like, Tottenham took it to Liverpool pretty well a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, Arsenal, obviously they've taken it to Man City now, but they've done it once. Can they do it again? That's going to be the next real test of character and test of progress for them. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they do.
Yeah, I think their next league game is the North London Derby. So Conte,
that's going to be big. You
know, I think Conte has an indifferent enough record against Arsenal. He wins some, loses some kind of way. But I think he's won the last few. He's played against them. The FA Cup being one of the competitions, I think Arsenal beat his Chelsea side in. All of that being said, there's a bit of I don't know what the best way about it is. Like, who do you think is going to come out of the next 4 weeks? Because I honestly believe that the next 4 weeks, with the congestion, the fact that we were playing fixtures that weren't played in December, it's going to be a lot busier for certain teams at the end of January, beginning of February. Who do you think is going to be able to weather that storm the best of the Arsenal, West Ham, Tottenham, or Man United? Because it is down to those four teams now, I think, explicitly. I don't think, you know, despite Brighton being technically in touch, Wolves being in touch, and Leicester being in touch, I don't think they have the staying power to do it. Who is going to come out and really just kind of get a run together and just grind them out? Because by the time we're coming into April or March again, I think the Europa League is coming back, or the whatever West Ham are in at this point. Tottenham and are excused for that. Manchester United are back in the Champions League, and Arsenal are out of Europe entirely, and so they give them a bit of breathing space in those weeks to kind of focus on the league and get the points on the board. But who do you think is going to come through with it?
To give a kind of non-answer, I kind of think they're all going to maintain this kind of form at the moment. Like, I think they're going to win games and lose games, you know.
Profound.
I don't think a team, one of these four, is going to put a run together where they win 6-7 games in a row. I just don't think any of them have the potential to do that. Maybe West Ham, like, if I'm being honest, but I think maybe they might end up focusing on the Europa League by the time it comes around, because that's just such a wonderful opportunity for them to actually win that competition, and then they qualify for the Champions League anyway if they do. So, you know, I think there's a lot of upside for them in doing that and very little downside. So, you know, if we're looking at the other three then and saying they'll all go for the league, you know, I just don't see much to separate them at the moment. And I don't think there a lot is going to happen in the next month to change that. I don't think any of them are going to really make any signings either. Like, I think if any of the four teams make a signing, it'll probably be West Ham. You know, they've got new ownership coming
Jesse
in.
Jesse Lingard.
Well, I think they need a new defender because they've just had a lot of injuries there.
Yeah.
Kurtzuma, Zhao, Agbana, a third Cresswell. Guy whose name I can't remember. Cresswell is out as well, so... You know, I think they maybe could do with some cover there, even if it's a short-term emergency loan situation. You know, I think they should do it if they can. And as well, they have new ownership there that might be looking to inject some cash. You know, it doesn't sound like Jesse Lingard's going this window. It sounds like he's going to run out his contract from what I've heard. So, yeah, that's going to be another wrinkle, I suppose, to this all. Is Man United could end up selling to a top four rival a player that could come in handy for that top four rival. So, but to answer your question, I don't know. Tottenham, I suppose, seem to be kicking into gear that bit more than Man United in terms of who's got the new manager. But I suppose we'll see how Man United do. Phil Jones is coming back. So, we'll see how Man United do at time of recording. They haven't played Wolves. So, I suppose a lot of my answer might depend on that performance as well.
Yeah, like it is all up in the air. There's a lot of things happening simultaneously. I think Tottenham. I think you know Conte hasn't had an easy time since he's taken over at the club. But at the saying that, I think the fact that they've missed a lot of games has actually bought or extended Conte's honeymoon period, because this Tottenham side aren't that good. And they've been picking up wins and draws basically at an even interval since he's taken over. And I don't know if that's really true to life. And I think, you know, in the age-old adage, they're due a beating. So I think there is one coming their way. I think Manchester United, on the flip side, have almost been winning by default in a lot of their games recently without really putting in a major performance and without their big players really showing up or really engaging in the absolute talent that they have. They're kind of just overwhelming teams because they just have sheer... They're top-heavy in terms of their talent and ability, and the teams they played have kind of invited that upon them. So whether that will change or not, I don't know. And yeah, West Ham and Arsenal are kind of the wild cards in it. Like, I didn't think either team would be in this race at this point of the season, but here they are. We'll see what happens. I do think that if any of the teams make signings, it will be an interesting change to make. Like Tottenham, as you said earlier in the show, are linked with Lukaku. I don't really think that's going to happen, but if it did, it would be a very interesting signing for them. Nobody else I think would really, other than having auxiliary players to cover injuries or cover players absent, I don't think there is major improvements I see being made in the January window.
Well, Tim, that looked pretty good for you for quite a long time out there today. You must feel as if someone's just given you a hefty punch in the stomach.
Yeah, I ain't never felt this bad either.
Well, it's FA Cup third round time. You know, it comes around every year, first weekend of January. All these big games, or all these many games, get played. But there's not very big few games. There is actually very few big games to choose from our perspective, anyway. I'm sure, you know, there's championship.
Swindon against Man City, you know.
Yeah, it's a big game for Swindon, I guess. Yeah. But in terms of what we want to watch or whatever, there's two decently sized games, I suppose, that I've chosen here. West Ham versus Leeds and Man United versus Aston Villa. Steven Gerrard going to Old Trafford, you know. There's a nice little story there. So how do you see those?
Is there a nice little story there? Well, I was looking at Leicester versus Watford just because you remember that crazy match, probably, is it nearly 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
That playoff semi-final or whatever it was at the time. There isn't many, like Bournemouth are going to Wimbledon. That could be an interesting, you know, for the purists of FA Cup lovers out there.
Which we aren't.
No, we're not. Like Man United, Villa, there's history in that tie, but generally speaking, United almost always win that FA Cup tie.
Yeah.
Forest, Arsenal, who I think have drawn each other three or four times in cup competitions in the last 5 years. That must be one of the most repeated fixtures in recent times.
I do remember it was a Forest game that Arsene Wenger a beating on his final FA Cup game. Was that the story there as well?
Yeah, I
or
think
am I
so.
Misremembering?
No, I think so. They definitely did. Like, I think they played each other last season as well
in the FA Cup. So.
It's a bizarre little thing. I think we'll see a lot from what the teams we've just talked about in the previous part, how they're going to approach the rest of their season based on this, like on the teams they put out. You know, because they are. You know, as you said, Manchester United playing Villa. Does Ralph Rangnick, I'm sure he does know the importance of the FA Cup to Manchester United fans, and he won't phone this one in and try and just like, we don't need this fixture in or any more FA Cup fixtures. We were busy enough with the Champions League and with other commitments. We'll see whether that happens or not, because I think Villa would love to win this. Steven Gerrard would love a victory at Old Trafford. You know, Even if I don't think he's that bothered about the FA Cup, really, it would be a good scalp for him and a very good thing on his CV as he continues to try and get that Liverpool job in the long run. Other than that, what other matches? What was the other match you said that you were interested in?
West Ham Leeds.
yeah, let's see how many kids can whatchamacallem, our dear Bielsa put out.
The one thing I will say, not necessarily for this fixture, because I don't think Leeds will take it too seriously, although West Ham might, is, you know, in the last couple of years, I think we've seen the kind of the rebirth of the mid-table. I think this year we've got a really solid mid-table of, like, Southampton to Brighton there that is, like, 14th to 8th. You know, maybe Southampton get dragged into that, so we could say Aston Villa to Brighton. Like, they're pretty solidly safe from relegation this year, I think. So, you know, I would like to see... You know, we saw Leicester won it last year, you know. I don't think he'll win it again. Or Patrick Vieira with Crystal Palace, you know, was in his last kick for Arsenal to win the FA Cup. So, you know, it'd be good to see him. And Crystal Palace love a cup run as it is. Remember Alan Pardew bringing them to the FA Cup final there about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So, and it'd be nice to see the likes of Aston Villa, Brentford and Wolves, and even Brighton, who don't really have a history in recent FA Cup history.
No, they're going to get knocked out. They're going to get knocked out this weekend.
They'll drive away, yeah. But I'd like to see them at least put out starting 11s that you'd see in a Premier League game and give it seriously. And if they lose, they lose, whatever happens.
Well, I think that could be a big casualty this year because of the COVID-related cases that are existing at the moment, because of injuries stacking up, because there is upcoming fixture congestion for a lot of the league. Like we've barely spoken about Burnley and their awful form that they're on, but they've only played 17 matches so far. So they could easily get back up into that comfortable, as you said, that mid table group very easily. But do you think they're going to put out a full team in the FA Cup at the risk of further damning themselves into a relegation battle in the Premier League? Not a chance. And I think that'll permeate through a lot of the teams, like the newly promoted sides, Brentford. I don't see them putting out a big side in it. Everton
Brentford, to be fair, have actually treated the cups very seriously in the last few years. They always put a deep run in the League Cup.
Yeah, but that's easier. I think that was for prestige. They don't need that anymore.
Yeah, but they did it this year. They're still in the League Cup, are they not? Or they were in it into the quarterfinals at least. So they are still giving it a go. Like, I do agree that the teams from Everton below, and it's sad to say Everton under Robert Petitis are in a relegation battle, but they are. Those teams below, I don't expect to put out a serious team, but like, I'm looking at Wolves in ninth, and I'm like, they're not in serious trouble of an FA Cup or of a relegation, so give the FA Cup a go. Like, it is a trophy. So that's my hope for the FA Cup this year, is that those teams that are safe from relegation do put out a starting 11 that you'd see in the Premier League. I'm not saying it has to be the same starting 11. Make a couple of changes, maybe, if you think you can get away with it. But, you know, I don't want to see a full youth team brought out and almost trying to get eliminated, because that would be just a bit disappointing. And it would probably lead to another big club winning the FA Cup is the ultimate problem.
Yeah, like, I think City will target it after last season's disappointment, to be quite honest. I think it's probably one of Pep's to-do list. And I've just checked Brentford as well. They played Oldham Athletic, Forest Green, who had players sent off. And Stoke before eventually succumbing to Chelsea in the quarter final of the EFL Cup this season.
Yeah, but you know,
I don't know how seriously they took it, to be honest.
Other teams get easy draws and get knocked out, so they generally in the recent past have treated the League Cup quite well. Not so
and,
much.
An interesting one in this, and you know, given the fact that I still feel, and I know I predicted it as well, that Newcastle United are going to get relegated this season. Even though, you know, there's still plenty of games left, there's a half the season left to go. Would they be an interesting shout for the FA Cup? Because, you know, they're going to, or at least the anticipation is, they're going to make a lot of signings this January window. Even if they get relegated, maybe the Cup can be a bit of a prestige thing for them to go for this season. And, you know, they haven't won a trophy in 50 years, other than the Intertoto Cup. So maybe this is the time for Newcastle to go after the Cup and finally win it. Like, they've got Cambridge in the third round. Not a bad draw. And maybe finally Eddie Howe can get onto getting some kind of runs together of winning games.
Well, Eddie Howe's record in the FA Cup at Bournemouth was atrocious. So I don't know how fancy
I'm just putting things out there for people to be interested in. Like, you know, they could score some goals against Cambridge in the round.
I do think
know?
They'll beat Cambridge. I'll give you that.
Like, there's Everton as well. I'm looking at, you know, Rafa does love a cup. And given how bad the league season has been for them, despite little small really bright shoots, And again, because of the way that they haven't played many games, they would, you know, I think they'd be level with Wolves, I think, if they win their games in hand.
They've played the same amount of games as Wolves.
Okay, maybe a bad example. But they'd be up a bit further in the league table. They'd be ahead of Crystal Palace if they win their games in hand. And that wouldn't be that bad, really, to look at. Like, I don't think they're going to be really in a relegation battle. I think they have been afflicted in a lot of ways this season. But anyway, not talking about the Premier League, the Cup. Like, you know, Hull, new owners, maybe they don't care about it. Everton, away from home. Is it KC Stadium? Is that where Hull play?
I can tell you it's the MKM Stadium now.
Oh, okay. Apologies.
And Hull, I can also tell you, I wrote about this today in work, Hull have a lot of injuries at the moment, so I don't
perfect
think...
timing for an Everton reserve side to come to that stadium. It's a Saturday evening game, if anyone wants. It'll be on television.
Yeah.
It'll probably be on the BBC or something, or whoever has the FA Cup these days. You know, we're kind of clutching at straws here, Declan, at this point with the FA Cup.
Yeah, we're struggling and we're drowning out here, and I think we need to just call it a day.
One thing that must be said about the FA Cup before you cut it on us, there can be penalty shootouts this weekend.
Oh, I suppose, yeah, they've downed ship with the replays.
Just this season, yeah. So there's not going to be replays this season. So
are we getting extra time?
Oh yeah, full extra time and penalties. This weekend fixture congestion could be even worse for certain teams. Like, I bet you Liverpool or someone, like, who has had to actually play all of their matches.
Jurgen Klopp is just like, if we're Chelsea, one yeah. all 90 minutes in, chuck it into our goal.
you think that, but they somehow came back against Leicester. But yeah, like Chelsea would be the ones. Like, Chelsea have to play. Are they playing this week as well? They have to play. Yeah, they're playing Chesterfield, so it's not the.
They're playing Tottenham as well.
Yeah, so but their FA Cup tie. I was like, maybe whoever Everton or whoever Chelsea play will knock them out, but no, Chesterfield won't knock them out. But yeah, Tottenham have a good go against them, and yeah, God, Chelsea have a terrible month ahead. have to play Tottenham three times, and they have to play Man City once in the next 2 weeks.
All without Edouard Mendy. Yeah. So,
and then they play Lille, which is probably the softest part of it, in the Champions League at the beginning of February. So, or is that the end?
So
of February?
That's
oh,
been
the Club
our
World
FA...
Cup as well. Sorry, apologies. The Club World Cup is happening as well.
We don't know what's going on with that, don't we? That's not been confirmed. What's going on with that?
No, it's completely. I make jokes about Thomas Tuchel not having what it takes at these big clubs, but at the same time, I look at the fixture congestion and I feel bad for him.
the deck currently stacked quite against him at the moment.
And he's having his battle with his most expensive player. You know, it's great times, Chelsea, great times.
Yeah, he's on the verge of a midlife crisis is the way things are going.
He's got no hair already, so he's already halfway there, but you know... Do you remember the good old days, Thomas? Do you remember when you used to be at, like, Mainz or wherever you were? Do you remember those days? Nobody really cared. They bombed your bus. That was at Dortmund, but that was a different situation.
Yeah. I was going to make a joke, but not in the light of that comment. I suppose that's a great note to end this on. That's been our amazing FA Cup preview for the third round this year. It's join us again next year, and join us next year again for what will likely be another great FA Cup third round preview in 2023.
There could be penalties. That's all I'll say to you. Hold out for the penalty shootouts. Like, I hope they do like a red zone type thing with just the penalties. Maybe we should just have penalties for the FA Cup. Frankly,
that should be the FA Cup's, you know, business card for this week, is there could be penalties. That'd definitely get me more invested. But until then, thank you for being here, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Declan.
And we'll discuss all those penalty shootouts next week. But until then, goodbye. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then don't forget you can tell family and friends about the show. Spread the word of the Total Football Takeover. This show can also be found on podcast services including Spotify by searching Total Football Podcast. You can also subscribe to my own Medium page in the show notes. You can follow Andrew on Twitter at Conbon27, C-O-N-B-O-N, and myself at CheesyHeartPun, C-H-E-E-S-Y-H-I-R-T-E-P-U-N. Most of all, thank you for listening, and we hope to be in your download feed next week too. The more the merrier. That's what we always say.